Welcome back to the Prepared Mindset Podcast, everyone, and happy Veterans Day. Certainly thank you to those of you guys that are listening who are serving and have served in our armed forces, kept our country safe. I know for many of you, that's something that you carry with you every day, and it's something that I know that myself and a lot of people deeply, deeply appreciate. And I think at the same time, you have to say there's a good handful of you out there that just get, you know, enraged when you don't get your free Applebee's dinner on Veterans Day. So nonetheless, I want to say thank you for everyone who served and is continuing to serve, especially, you know, in these very confusing and difficult times. But welcome back if you guys are a regular listener, and welcome in if this is your very first time listening to the Prepared Mindset Podcast. Obviously, I have some strong opinions on a lot of stuff based off of just how I started this week's episode. But it should be a really, really good one. I think we're going to be breaking into some uncharted territory for this podcast, talking about a few things that we haven't really had the opportunity to get into before, specifically talking around breaching as a skill set and breaching as a need and a requirement in a lot of use cases and a lot of applications. And the difficult part with talking about breaching is I think when we say breaching, everybody's first thought, or maybe not everybody's, but a lot of people's first thought is, you know, short shotguns, you know, SBSs, and, you know, blowing off hinges or explosive breaching like we see in like forward operations videos, maybe some of the early GBRS stuff where they, you know, they blew a door and then did some structure clearance work. Like the cool part of breaching where a lot of people sit and want to say, yeah, man, I would love to be a breacher. Or on the more cringy side, guys want to say, as a civilian, right, I'm going to build a breacher kit. And Lord knows, I've certainly seen some people do some really goofy stuff with trying to add breacher tools to their civilian plate carrier setup. So things like short pry bars that you buy at the hardware store, things like trying to heat up and remold a piece of PVC pipe to carry a like 18-inch Halligan tool, lots of stuff. I've seen guys advocate for buying certain brands of plate carriers because, oh, it has this zip-on pattern that can put this like extra thick plastic molly panel on the back, and maybe it was like a backpack frame, like an Alice frame for an old backpack, and we can zip tie or whatever ratchet strap a quickie saw to it. And it's like, is that for a civilian, is that realistic? I would say probably not. I'm not saying to be very clear, I'm not saying you shouldn't learn it. I'm just saying it's probably not very realistic, and shotgun breaching with the kind of specialty ammo you need to have is also less realistic. I'd say probably more than a quickie saw strapped to your back, but less realistic than just being able to know how to use a breacher bar or just basic skills like lock picking and stuff like that. So we're going to actually get into breaching with this week's guest. Before I tell you guys who this week's guest is, though, I do want to stop and take a moment to say thank you to our Patreon patrons. It's patreon.com/prepared_mindset_pod. Thank you guys if you have supported us or are supporting us currently through the Patreon page. It's a constant source of struggle for me to make sure that I'm getting content out on all of our platforms, as I am a one-man show, right? So the videos that you guys are enjoying, or at least looks like you're enjoying on the YouTube channel that are dropping weekly or bi-weekly, the Instagram channel, yes, of course, the podcast here, and then the Patreon. The Patreon, of course, you guys, we appreciate all of the support. It helps make things like, I mean, well, just all of this possible as I'm looking at like buying a new, computer and stuff to keep things going. Cause it's been, believe it or not, it's been like over 5.5 years of running this podcast on the same computer. I have not upgraded my computer since then. I have added like an external hard drive and stuff like that because it just became necessary with all the content and the recordings and stuff as we're pushing near, and we're way closer than not to episode 350, which then of course will mean we're closer than not to 400, which is wild to think about. But want to say thank you because your guys' support, both through the Patreon page, but then also if you've bought any of our gear through our Spreadshirt shop and whatnot, that all comes back to us and it goes straight back into Prepared Mindset to keep everything going. So if you guys enjoy this content, head over to the Patreon page, check that out. It's available through the link tree on our Instagram. Follow us on our platforms. That stuff helps a whole heck of a lot. But we also have some partners in the space, a couple businesses I want to tell you guys about because they've just been outstanding to work with and very, very supportive of our mission. And that has to start with the folks at Custom Night Vision. You guys, if you're looking to get into your very first night vision device, I can wholeheartedly tell you, after speaking with these gentlemen a whole hell of a lot, having Kevin on the podcast, having conversations, and even purchased my first laser device through Custom, there is nobody better in the market to guide you guys to the right decision for you than the team over at Custom. The website is customnightvision.com. You can head on over. You can check it all out for yourself. They even have a chat function. Okay, a chat icon, little pop-up window. You can reach out. You can talk to Ben. You can talk to Kevin. You can talk to Trevor, and they will guide you. They hold your hand if you do like that inference, right, through making your purchase. So whether that's, hey, I'm really budget strapped and I want a PVS 14, or I have a little bit better budget, so I'm trying to figure out if a single tube device with a good white phosphor L-bit or L3 tube is going to make sense, or maybe I get a bino housing with some NNVT tubes or some Photonis tubes, because my use cases and my needs are mostly for the flat range and I don't need to have L3 tubes in my device. How do I meet in the middle? What are the options? Which housing is best? Because they do have a ton of housings available, starting at like $1,000, which is actually pretty cheap for housings, because they go up to, you know, $2,500 plus in some instances. But head on over to customnightvision.com and check out everything that they have to offer you guys. That includes thermal optics from DNT, all of those available with mounts from American Defense Manufacturing, as well as helmets. Because if you guys are running nods, you need a helmet. They have the whole line of Team Wendy helmets, starting with the bump to the carbon bump to their ballistic and ballistic super light, as well as their new Epic line of helmets. All of that available with discounts built in on the site. You just got to read the product descriptions, you guys. Again, head on over to customnightvision.com. You'd be surprised. Probably save yourself quite a bit of money and get yourself into the superpower that you can buy. So thank you to those guys and all of their support, because night vision is fucking awesome. And also want to take a moment and say thank you to the team at Harrington Arms. You guys, I was actually down in Ohio last week, and that's where Harrington is located. I did not get to meet up with those guys. It was a work trip, but Harrington Arms website is harringtonarms.com. At the time of this recording for Veterans Day, they have a sale going on with a bunch of different stuff on their compensators, on the accessories, like slide releases and other good things, right? All of that stuff and more available at harringtonarms.com. Go check it out for yourself. Usually, if you're trying to save a little bit of coin, they have a bunch of blemmed units in stock too, which honestly, they sent me one and I couldn't find a blem anywhere, which says a whole lot about the affordability, obviously, but then also the standard to which they hold themselves and their products to, which we love to see in this community. When you get a blem from someplace like Harrington and you're looking over, all right, where is it, man? It's got to be like a big gouge or like a crack or something in here, and there's not. You can't find it. It says a lot about what they expect and what they demand of themselves. Head on over to harringtonarms.com, you guys. Check out all the compensators, the magwells, the mag extensions, and a heck of a lot more. Thank you to them. And thank you to both companies, right? Harrington Arms, Custom Night Vision, big supporters and believers in what we're doing here at Prepared Mindset. So thank you so much. And go check those guys out and keep an eye on their website. You know, as you guys are listening to this, it'll probably be somewhere around the middle of November, which means Black Friday. We're creeping up on Black Friday, and if you guys are looking to save some coin, probably going to see some sales. So it's kind of the American way of doing things. This is probably the best time of the year to save money. It's when I bought my very first night vision years and years ago. I bought an L-bit white phosphor PVS 14, and it was downhill from there. So check out both those companies. So thankful for their support, and proud to call them partners, honestly. But let's get into this week and what we're talking about. This week, I am sitting down. We're getting into breaching, right? And I'm sitting down with Chris Curis. And Chris, I apologize, man, if I just butchered your last name. Two things. One, I am sincerely sorry. And two, you join a long but distinguished list of guests whose name I have absolutely ruined. So while I really am sorry, it almost makes you nobody special, because I do it all the time. So it should be a good discussion. Chris is in law enforcement in Florida. And if you guys have been following the digitals, the socials, if you will, right, and seen some of the talk, conversations, and I guess videos around Good Dude Concepts. That's who Chris is, right? He created the BRB, which is the Breach and Rescue Bar, if I'm getting that acronym correct. And, you know, again, like, we talk about breaching, everybody likes to go straight to giant, like, you know, 2.5 and 3 foot long, 4 foot long Halligan tools and chainsaws and quickie saws and explosive breaching and, you know, all that stuff, which is really cool and ultra specialized. I think where the BRB comes in, when we talk about concepts of breaching, it's a very unique design because it's the size of a regular hardware store pry bar, but has like some unique features built into it. So we're going to talk about breaching. It's not just going to be, you know, talking about the BRB, but just so you guys know who Chris is, what he's doing and has done, where he's come from, works in law enforcement, all that good stuff, right? We're going to talk about breaching as some concepts, the importance of it, and where we see it a lot in the common day practice, because like I said, we're not stacking up on doors as civilians. We're not, you know, using quickie saws to cut through this, that, and everything else, but we are doing things like breaking windows during car accidents or breaking windows on houses when somebody might be trapped inside and there's a fire or some kind of other exigent circumstance, right? Or having to pop a lock on a door, things like that. And, you know, as civilians and also as patrol cops and things like that, it's a much more a reasonable expectation you would use a tool like this. So it's really cool to see it introduced to the market when we're already flooded with so many ideas, to see this embraced so well. And especially by people, you know, like Jabo, who's been on the pod in the past, right, with Guild Solutions and a bunch of other folks we could go on for a while talking about that bar and what it brings to the conversation, because we know that breaching is such a powerful skill set and such a required skill set, really, in so many conversations, not just for CQB, because what you see on TV, but really roadside rescue work and so many other things. So I have no doubt, right? I don't know what we're going to get into because I'm recording this before I sit down with Chris, but I have no doubt we're probably going to get into a whole bunch of stuff. I know he's done a couple other podcasts and had some great conversations with my colleagues in this sector of the community. So been looking forward to this, been able to put it on the books for a couple weeks, not terribly long here, but really, really excited for the opportunity. I think it's going to be a very illuminating conversation, or enlightening, if you guys like that word better. And yeah, looking forward to it. So let's just get into it with Chris Karras of Good Dude Concepts. Chris, welcome to the podcast, man. Appreciate you making the time to jump on here. How are you?
Good, man. Thank you for having me. I really enjoy getting to talk to good dudes and have a good conversation and just educate people or have bullshit sessions like this.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's about 50-50. Sometimes it's educational and sometimes it's just bullshit. And usually it's always good stuff, man. But happy to have you on here. I had recorded the introduction to this conversation already and was kind of explaining to the listeners, I haven't really had the opportunity to really get too deep into breaching as a as a subject or a concept or a skill set, however you want to like label it, right?
Sure.
I think it's one of those things that there's a ton out there where people have the opportunity to draw misconceptions and misinformation and disbelief around like, what are you most likely to use? What's realistic? What's not, you know?
Yeah.
So I think this will be really good for me and then hopefully really good for the listeners too. But let's, if you could, introduce yourself to the audience and maybe just share a little bit about kind of who you are and what you do, man.
Sure. I'm Chris Karras. I'm an active duty law enforcement officer in South Florida since about 2014. Prior to that, I was a strength and conditioning coach at the college level for University of Central Florida. And from that, when I got into law enforcement, I was lucky enough to get on my SWAT team really early in my career. And from there, evolved throughout to being a breacher. Then, long story, I ended up becoming a sniper, and now I'm the team leader for my squad. And I also, my full-time gig is instructing for the agency. So I'm one of the lead firearms and tactics instructors for my agency. And I also own a company or started a company called Good Dude Concepts. And our first product is the BRB or the Breaching Rescue Bar, which I'll make sure if you don't already have one, I'll send that one out to you. Just trying to create products and give training to cops and civilians that want to be responsible and provide solutions that I wish existed. And after years of, I'm a gear nerd and buying gear and trying to scratch that itch, I wish it was a little bit different and stitching or Dremeling, grinding different tools or products to make them fit for my needs. I got linked up with some really good dudes who believed in my passion and we're starting to bring some products to life. And so far, so good.
Yeah, and I think there's something to be said with all gear and all tools, right? Like if you can, if you don't have exactly what you need, being able to have the wherewithal to like, hey, let's make what we need. And not even getting into like the like you made a product, right? But like I've seen some videos where guys take like the Stanley like Fat Max like pry bar thing, like, oh, if you take a cutting wheel and cut the tooth off of it and do this and this, you can make this tool. And I'm like, okay, that's neat if you really need it. And I know that there's I've had conversations with guys, even at the LE level, people assume that you like cops just have access to all these tools. Like
Oh, yeah, no.
no questions asked. You need a Halligan? Cool, you got it, man. Like breaching shotgun, I mean, maybe, but I mean a shotgun is a breaching shotgun. It's just usually people assume they're smaller, but you see a lot of stuff with like guys in MySpace, the civilian space, where they're like, oh, they make those self created breaching tools. And I'm like, do you really know if you should do that? Like just structurally speaking, the way that's designed, is that really going to work? Do you even know what you're doing? And I think most folks, I'm just going to say it, like I believe everybody should have access to the information. I'll say that right now. But I think people have no clue how they're doing, how they're going to do any of that shit, and then they just like throw it on a plate carrier in like a piece of fire hose or a PVC tube, and they're like, I'm ready to fucking go. They don't understand a damn thing about it, and it's just it's a giant misconception. Like you're going to carry a big weight on your back for no reason. You don't know how to use it. So how did you get to the point where with getting onto your team, you decided like, well, breacher, that sounds like fun. I mean, is that just one of those things because everybody assumes it's fun? You just jumped in, or
So,
how'd you end up there?
like most units, whether it's law enforcement, military, the big guys end up getting the breaching gig. I'm
The heavy
six
stuff,
seven.
yeah.
Yeah, I'm 6'7", about 270 pounds. So right away there, I want to say once I passed my probationary year of doing all little like grunt work and stuff like that, my boss handed me a set of breach gear and a shotgun. And was ready to go. And I was like, all right, cool. So learning as much as I could, trying to drink through a fire hose. I'll say this, I've had amazing mentors throughout my entire career. I've been very, very blessed. I love where I work. I love the people I work with. For guys who aren't getting good breaching training, if they're law enforcement, everybody pretty much that I know knows a firefighter. Those guys are really good at breaching. There's tactics and stuff like maybe
Sure.
you can fine tune here or there, but those guys know how to breach a lot of stuff. They know how to get in anything. So
Dude,
that's
there's
always
yeah,
the
there's
default answer for guys who seeking training.
yeah, there's that there's a guy, I don't even know who, I think he's a New York firefighter who does videos on social media with like one of those practice door frames, and he just shows like 800 ways to use a Halligan. And I'm like, dude, I never even thought, like, it's just, yeah, just stick it in here and then rotate it this way instead of the way you want to pry outward. Just rotate and you'll have all the left and it pops the door. I'm like, never would have. It's crazy. People assume, yeah, right, like they, because they're non, I don't say combat oriented, right? That's a thing, but like, yeah, firefighters, man, like unbelievable.
But like any tool, once you learn like what everything is kind of designed for and what its capabilities, like a Halligan with like a basic Halligan has it's like a Swiss Army knife, but it doesn't look like shit. Like it's just like oh, a big chunk of metal. But once you get a little dissected class of like, all right, this can be used for this, and that. Like oh damn, this is like I said, a Swiss Army knife of breaching. Once you have the capability is in the tool, and then the knowledge is really the capability. Like you're talking about guys just throwing shit on their kit. Like very rarely can you buy capability. Like even my tool, like it gives you capability, but you still gotta like know how to implement it and what scenarios and how you can really take advantage of its capabilities.
So I mean, in the scope of like what you do on your team, or I guess just like law enforcement breaching as a general discussion, right? Is that the most used tool? Because I think with a lot of and this is just my very uninformed assumption, is that with most residential doors, like a sledgehammer can get you into a lot. I know that, and here's the thing, like I fully acknowledge there's never a one answer does everything. You know, like I know sledgehammers are great for a lot of things, but they're also very heavy. And that becomes problematic for a lot of different reasons and big structures and like restowing it and everything. Is the Halligan the tool that you find that like gets used the absolute most?
Yeah, if I had to pick one tool to like I can give you the genesis of the idea is my team responded to the Parkland Stoneman Douglas scene.
Oh, yeah.
back in, I think it was like 2016 or 2017, I forget exactly, but we had to park far away because of course cops always park their cars in all the roadways, and if you're not first on scene, you're humping it for at least a quarter mile probably, especially a scene like that. And I grabbed a collapsible Halligan because even Halligan's like in opening doors, out opening doors, it doesn't matter. Like you can find a way in where Halligan. A sledge limits you a little bit. You can still get some stuff done, but a Halligan definitely is. If I had to pick one, that's the tool I'm grabbing.
Yeah, 'cause I just thinking like so I used to teach high school marching band. So like I spent a lot of time in high schools. I know a lot of those doors with like the riot bars or whatever, like the you know, you push on them right to open the doors, and a lot of that stuff is all like metal frame construction. You know, like, so yeah, I assume that a sledgehammer fixes anything. And honestly, probably not so much in those situations, not without a lot of work. So that makes sense. Is there with some of those collapsible tools, do you is it still a viable solution? Just because like sometimes I feel like guys make this stuff and they're like, yeah, it's collapsible, it's so convenient, but then you like you lose leverage because you lose length, or it's made out of cheaper materials, stuff like that.
If you when you sacrifice size, usually you have to make up for it with technique and strength. Because the longer it is, it's like a little bit of physics. The longer that it is, it's the longer length of pole you have, more leverage you get, more strength it has. So there's even a way the bottom of the bottom fork of the Halligan is designed actually to lock into each other, so you can really double the size of it. If it's a big bitch of a door, you can take two Halligans, connect them, and then it doubles the size of your length of pole, and the physics are great. So it's like if you're ever building an AR and you got a castle nut that's stuck or something, you put the wrench on, then you just grab a lead pipe, put it on there, and then you do the same thing, and it gives you that length of pole. If you're doing a barrel nut, all kinds of stuff like that. It's just a little bit of physics is all it really is. And that's the fun thing about breaching is a problem-solving brain with a good, decent tool, you'll find a way in. It may take you a little bit longer or a little bit faster based on whatever experience you have, but having capable tools is the key to it. Like most doors, like in opening doors, you could try to mule kick them and stuff like that, but or shoulder them, but you only do that so many times before you realize, all right, that should hurt. It's like I need to find a better way.
Yeah, and that's just being smarter about it. And honestly, yeah, throwing a pipe on the end of a wrench or anything. Dude, I used to do that. I used to drive really shitty cars when I was younger. I thought that, you know, early 90s Honda Civics were where I needed to be, and I'm like I'm 6'3". Like I'm not quite as big as you, but I'm pretty tall, and it was always the stupidest shit ever, but everything seized on them. You'd put like a half inch drive ratchet on and you're like, "Okay, let's throw a pipe on it." And then sometimes it would break loose. I've snapped off so many bolts doing that. It always scares me when I do it, 'cause I'm like, I don't want to drill anything out. Like this is always a pain in the ass, but
You just
you'll
tripled
get
the
it.
time.
Yeah. Yeah. You tried to, yeah. Instead of just doing the smart thing, which would have been to like hose it down with penetrator or something and give it an hour. Yeah. No, I always the hard way. But yeah, I mean, it's like, there's a lot of thinking behind it. I think people assume that the things you would use the most, because we see it in like video, and it's the same with any content or TV, right? Like breaching shotgun, you're going to hit the hinges and then just kick the door and like, oh, we're done. And I don't know that that's actually reality. From what I've been told, and it's only from one source, usually you actually can't, because there's a lot of considerations of like what's going on inside of the facility or the room. Like the one example I was given was like, oh, if there's an oxygen tank in there or kids, you can't really use a shotgun. You know, it's not. And so is that, can you walk through some of like that stuff? Just because I think people jump to that automatically, but like, what is your, if you were looking at that and wanting to use a shotgun, is there like a process of elimination you go through? Like, nope, if I hit any of these boxes, I can't do that, or wouldn't want to do it.
So if you're just using like a normal shotgun round, like a slug, then yeah, there's some considerations you might want to avoid. If you're using a specific breaching round, and they make several of them of different weights or sizes, you're probably pretty safe. I haven't come across many instances where it had to be like, oh no, bail on that. But I will say breaching with shotguns, at least where I work, has kind of tapered away from being used because explosive breaching in law enforcement's gotten really popular. So I've been blessed, and actually it's not a great story for me, but explosive breaching for law enforcement was very new when I started to get into breaching, and only team leaders at the time were allowed to do it because it was a new high liability thing, And you had to go to the specific schools, know all the math. And it was like, all right, only the senior, super senior guys can do it. So I was like, when can I go? And they're like, I don't know, then 6, 7 years maybe. I'm like, well, shit. So then the
Yes.
opportunity came to go to sniper school like a year later. I was like, well, fuck, I'll go do that. So I
Yeah.
kind of took breach. It was took stepped away from breaching to go do that, and I don't regret anything. But probably about a year after being a sniper, that became more mainstream. That oh, we're going to send 8 guys to breaching school, and I was like, well, I want to go, and they're like, no, you're already a sniper. Fuck off. I was like, well, fuck you guys. So it is what it is. I still enjoy it, and I actually don't really love handling explosives anyway, so it's worked out for the best. But there's. It's gotten so safe, and like the math is down to a T. Like you can literally, these guys, or at least I know my guys and all the guys I've worked with and trained, like you get it down to like the exact science, and that door does exactly as you expect it to do. But it's reading the door, knowing the material of the door, what's with the mechanics that you're working with, and you literally just plug and play a couple numbers, build that charge, and the door just drops right out of the way. It's awesome to see like guys that really buy into it. And they obsess about it, and then when they get it down perfect, it's like, ah, sweet. There's no failed breach or any of that stuff.
Do you see, like, I don't know, in the part of Florida that you're in, do you guys see, like, is it mostly residential? Is it commercial? You get a good mix. Like, what do you guys see the most that you're, I mean, like you said, you figured out, you dial it in, you're like, oh yeah, we've seen these kinds of doors the last 8 hits, so we know exactly, how to knock it out.
Depends on where we're working, but because we're in South Florida, everything has hurricane code. So
I didn't
most
even
doors
think
are
about that.
heavier duty. And
Damn it.
if it's a good hurricane door, like the thick laminate glass and it's aluminum door, and if it has throw bolts that's or throw latches at the vertical and bottom, like you need a big ass charge for that, or you need a saw to cut through the glass. Those can be a real pain in the ass. And double doors, French doors, sliding doors, like. There's all kinds of stuff. Most of the time, like a good hurricane window, the weakest part of it is the lock. So a halogen wedged in there with enough force, you break the locking mechanism. You don't have to worry about defeating the glass. You really just have to defeat the locking mechanism because it's just a little piece of metal. So little, again, problem-solving tricks for shit like that. But the doors, they're definitely a pain in the ass. We actually did a demo for the BRB with the FBI a couple months ago where they were dealing with some hurricane glass, and this will actually cut through it. You're going to work your ass off for it because it's not really designed for that. But if you needed to, it would definitely penetrate and cut through that lamination.
Yeah, and that's one of the things people I don't think always consider some of the, I don't want to say it's minutiae because it's kind of a big deal, but like not all windows are made the same, right? So you think about
No.
schools and places like that, commercial places, a lot of them have wired glass, which is a whole other animal. The lamination and stuff like that, it's not always just going to be, it's not, you're not always just going to hit it with something heavy and the window
Yeah.
just shatters and falls out.
No.
Like, not realistic.
No. You hope it's tempered, because if it's not, then you're dealing with big, sharp chunks of glass, and that shit has ended people's careers, because you get a good cut like that, you're talking nerve damage. Like,
Yeah.
there's guys who have really, really jacked themselves up just breaching windows and breaking windows, so that's whatever tools I've got, and you definitely need to be careful.
Yeah, and I think the assumption is like, oh yeah, if I have a glove on, I'll just, because again, you see it in movies and shit, like, oh, I'll wipe it out with my gloved hand, or I'll wrap a shirt around my hand. And it's like,
Nope.
oh,
Get
dude.
yourself some good rubber, I'm sorry, leather gloves, and wear long sleeves of some kind. I don't care what kind of combat shirt you wear, but most of them have the reinforced nylon on the sleeves. It's a little bit something, but I put my hand through glass too many times. My hands are all scarred up, just doing dumb shit. Luckily, it hasn't cost me anything besides a little couple cuts here and there. But if you have the opportunity to throw a pair of gloves on, you highly, highly should consider it, because
Yeah,
that shit, you're just going to create a bigger headache for yourself.
I mean, I put my hand and arm as a kid. I put it through plexiglass. Like we had it on like the back door to our house, and like that bad enough for me. Then I'm like, I don't ever want to deal with this again. Like that was my first time having to pull pieces of something out of like my skin, and I just didn't enjoy it. Like I'm not in a hurry for that. But talking about like. And that goes into the bar that you created, right? And is that like, here's the thing that like really bugs me, and I already talked about it a little bit, is just like guys would throw some of these like weird hardware store pry bars on their kit. And I've been told from some folks like they actually, some of those can be actually helpful in certain
Oh,
situations, but
yeah. They are.
like guys will throw it on, like, oh, I'll shove it behind my magazines, or I'll like, oh, whatever, and I'll buy a special sleeve from whatever nylon company. And I'm like, okay, but do you need to do that? Like, why would you add more weight to all of your shit if you like, when are you gonna do that? Where do you practice it
Yeah,
anywhere?
that's the thing.
Like, yeah, I not saying it's not worth it, but like, does it like make it make sense? And like, when I look at like what you put together, my first thought was the demonstrations of like I think you call it, is it the beak or like the point, right? And the way you demonstrated in a couple of the videos, like cutting through a windshield, was like, keep that in your car, like roadside accidents and stuff, like cutting through windows, breaking windows. Like, one of the things I always wonder was like those little keychain punches. I'm like, is that really gonna do enough? And like, do you have anything with you? We were just talking about like clearing out the glass. Is that are you is that gonna be enough? Where something like what you have there, that was my first thought. So how did like what was the thought process with you, with your knowledge, right? So somebody who's been doing breaching, you've been through stuff, you've seen a lot of shit. How did you get to the point where you're like, I need to create this? Like, it's small, you know, like small tools historically, or yeah, traditionally speaking, I'm sorry, don't lend themselves all the time, right? So like, how do you figure out the right combination to put that together?
So the Stoneman Douglas incident was really the genesis of the idea because we had to run so far away. A lot of guys had to run a mile or half mile, whatever, didn't grab breach gear. So our team had a handful, and then they gave us a hat, like a section of the school to go clear, and they gave us master keys, and they didn't work. So whatever keys they gave us sucked or whatever. So guess who got to breach like 50 doors? Like my forearms were very sore. Not a huge deal, but it started the idea of, all right, every SWAT guy, every special operations military dude, doesn't matter, firefighter, like we're all hardworking, lazy dudes. We don't like big, bulky, heavy things. So I was like, why doesn't something minimalist and capable exist? And I tried everything. I tried all the cat paw like pry bars at Home Depot and Lowe's, all the bent screwdriver type designs, any knife company that made one. I would buy, and I went through everything, and I would grind and Dremel everything and try to give it extra capability, but nothing really scratched the itch. And I tried the window punches too. A lot of people will still put their hand through glass with that because they usually put it right in the middle and they apply force. And then once the window gives away, guess what goes through? Your whole hand. And if you're not wearing gloves, you're going to find out real quick your hand is now bleeding like crazy. So there's techniques to that too. So if you are running a little keychain window punch, which whatever, have some capability if you need it, do it into a corner where your hand's going to hit the metal and not go all the way through the middle of that bench. So started going down the rabbit hole, and then I was actually in a class with Will Petty. He teaches VCQB and stuff like that, and those guys are really, really good
Centrifuge.
dudes. Yes, yeah, Blake and Will and fuck, I'm drawing a blank on his other instructor's name, the dude from Alabama. Shit, I'm a bad friend. Either way, they're good, and they started talking about the different types of vehicle glass. And this is back probably like 2016 or 2017, and that's when laminate glass on side windows was starting to become a thing. So I started going down the rabbit hole, and it became Florida, I'm sorry, Federal Highway Safety Standard 226 for ejection mitigation. So the only reason your windshield is laminate is so if you get a head-on collision, you're not, and you don't have a seatbelt, you're not going through that bitch. It's supposed to stop you from being ejected, and you go 100 yards down the fucking roadway. Now, if you're rolling over, though, most windows were tempered, so they've added the laminate glass to the side. So if you do have a flip rollover, you're not going flying, and you're staying in capsule, staying in the compartment of your vehicle. Hopefully you survive because it's less chance you're going to get crushed or anything like that. And then picking the brains of my medics on my team, which are all fire guys. My whole family's actually firefighters. I'm like, what tools do you guys use? And they had this big bitch called like a glass master or the glass blaster or something. And it was the size of a baseball bat or like a nine iron. I was like, well, shit. All right. So it was like $400. So I was like, all right, well, that's not going to really do me much good. So I think I still bought, I did get one that the fire department was like replacing. So I threw it away. So I took it. But like everything else with law enforcement, it sits in the trunk of your car or in the back of your Tahoe, and it gets buried under shit. So it wasn't really like easily accessible. And I was like, all right, there's got to be a minimalist option. So basically drew this up, Kind of looks like a mini Halligan in a way, but ne never to designed to replace the full size stuff. This is minimalist, so it can be on you. And if your car is down the road, or you're on a domestic on the sixth floor of a hotel or apartment building, and you're hearing screams and you have to go, but your breaching kit's in the car, like you have something to get in. But the basic features that I built into it was the beak, because it looks like a bird, and my wife kind of helped me name it as well. Is designed to either break that tempered glass easily. We did a demo with a 10-year-old girl, and she was able to break and rake a window with minimal effort. So there's been people who have talked a little bit, oh, you're so big, it's easy for you. I'm like, I promise you, it's easy for everybody. But it can penetrate that laminate glass, and then once the serrations are available, treat it like a chainsaw, or like you're cutting a steak. As long as the teeth are moving, it'll eat. And with minimal effort, those side windows, you're talking 3 to 5 seconds of good technique, and that window's gone. We've all probably can YouTube right now videos of a guy using like a baton or an asp on a side laminate window of a car on fire or a car in water, and he's getting his ass handed to him. So, and we've gotten a bunch of stories that we're working on, like publicizing on our website and social media. Guys have been submitting videos of body camera footage or testimonial stories about how they've used them, or they wish they had one in a situation just like we described. And it gives you that capability. So, more or less, I hated the idea of like, I just have to figure it out with like a tire iron or something. Yeah, I can make that work, but nothing was ideal. So then the serrations are sharp enough that they'll cut the glass, but not you. So God forbid your hand slips, like you're not filleting your fucking fingers open. We put a couple holes in there to lighten the weight. And then I added like barbell style texturing on the front and back spines, just because, again, South Florida, I'm either sweating my ass off or getting rained on half the time. And then the bottom fork designed for breaching as well. You can use this for breaching, but I found that the fork at the bottom is definitely more. Most of the tools I found at Home Depot were designed for pulling nails. Like it is what it is. It'll have a fork similar, but I decided to give it a way more aggressive angle. It's 55 degrees. So whether it's in opening or out opening doors, it'll give you enough leverage that you can force your way in. And so far, whether it's a solid wood door, metal door, or a hollow door, like good strength and technique, it's able to eat. Other fun things that working with the guys from Guild Solutions, you ever want to talk to real subject matter experts on breaching? Like SOCOM calls these guys to teach breaching classes for tier one and tier two military units. They
I've
are
had
fantastic.
I had Jabo on. It's probably, I'm gonna say it's like a year and a half or something ago. It was probably like 2 or 3 years ago at this point, but I did have him on. Super cool
Yeah,
guy.
I
And
love
I've
it. J
seen.
Shane and Jabo, all the guys at Guild are freaking rock stars. Like the epitome of good dudes. They were
And they know what they're
playing
talking
with it.
about.
Oh yeah, they were playing with it, and they're like, "Hey, you ever talked about tire stems?" And I'm like, "No, but now I'm curious." So we went and fucking. If you have an overdose driver or a guy passed out the wheel and the car's not in park, or you need to just stop the car, or whatever. Take the fork, pinch the tire stem, pull it, and it rips right out, and tire starts deflating in 2 seconds.
Oh
So
shit.
it'll be
I
a little bit
didn't
of
know that.
fun features that weren't part of the original design, but just again, the stars aligned for us on that. And the whole goal when I partnered up with guys to bring this to market was it had to be affordable for cops or first responders and just people who want to be responsible. And some of the tools I bought were expensive. And come to find out, most of the knife companies out there, they just use like scrap sheet metal to make like I call it a breech bar, and it's just like a straight bar with like 550 cord wrapped around it. And I would break them because they weren't designed for it. It was just something they would sell to cut costs, maybe. I don't know. Regardless, but we built in a basic like discount and made this thing $100. So an hour or two of overtime for a first responder puts it in their hands. We can talk to nauseam about how I wish agencies bought me or bought their people the right gear. So sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, depending on where you work. But if you wanted to purchase it for yourself or get a stocking stuffer for a new graduate from the academy, you at least give them something to work with. And some guys are buying them, like you said, put them in your car. Like guys bought it for their wives, leaving the glove box or the center console. I did a video that I even extracted myself, like of a Dodge Charger. They all have side laminate windows, sat in the front seat. Hit the window, sawed the serration through, and window fell out, and I can climb out the window if I had to. So God forbid you're trapped in the car and it catches on fire, or you're just trapped and you need to get the fuck out after an accident, you're able to do so instead of just sitting there waiting and not
Right.
have anything to do.
Well, even at, and at $100, it's even like thinking, 'cause I know just the whole defund the police shit, like it's a ball buster, you know, and budgets, I mean, everything's tight. Like, you know, we all feel the squeeze. I think law enforcement probably more than most. At $100 a piece, you can, as an agency, it's way easier to look at that and go, you put one in every car or every vehicle somewhere, right? And then you have access, and it costs, because I know I've looked into some of the Halligan tools and stuff. Like you said, they're fantastic. They're like $400 or $500. They're big, heavy, and it's like, okay, well, if you can do the 1-to-5 ratio, like I'd rather have five of those that you can hand out to people on the road where they're gonna need those for anything. You said people pass out at the wheel, or because it is, it's not a roadside only tool, right? It's built for breaching. I'm thinking like welfare checks. We just actually what is it? August. I was in Indianapolis for work, and I'm at sitting down at dinner with some vendors and stuff. Like they sit down my steak, and my phone goes off, and I look. My wife texts me. The guy, like a kitty corner across the street from us, they found him in his house dead. I'm like, okay, you know, like those kind of things where you're looking. Okay, how can I get in? Is this person actually dead? Are they having a medical emergency? You know, or EM, I don't know if that's really falls under the realm of EMTs, but like, you know, just I think the applications really spread beyond the roadside. Any one focus is, I think, is what I was trying to say. Like, and yeah, I mean, 'cause I've looked at, you know, you mentioned you tried all the stuff at Home Depot, and that was the first thing I thought of when I saw that bar was like, that looks like a cat's paw. I mean, we had those in the house all the damn time. My dad loves those, you know, but like when you look at one of those, and you look at the BRB, like the th it's like 2 or 3 times as thick. Like the metal stock you guys used on that is real beefy. Which, like, now that you're holding it up and I can like actually get a good look at it and everything, like that's pretty chunky, you know, like while being very small. How much testing like went into that to like figure out how thick is too thick and how thick is enough that it's not going to just like warp and deform after one really good use?
So, combination of a couple things fell into place. The dimensions I requested is, again, I hate heavy things, so I was like, it can't be too heavy. I don't need this thing to be 5 pounds. So it ended up weighing in at 1 pound 5 ounces. So about the same as a fully loaded AR mag. So not too
That's
bad.
not bad at all.
And then I wanted it narrow enough that if you don't need a fancy pouch, you could just slide into a panel molly or behind a mag, or it's easily accessible, easy to carry. Anybody. You can probably, you have experience running around with guns and stuff. Like, if you're thinking about your gear and your kit, like, all right, you need to fix something. Like, it should be like almost in the back of your head. Like, you don't have to give it a second thought. So I didn't want it to be a pain in the ass. And then the beautiful thing about the guys I partnered with is they've been in the industry a little bit. They own a knife company, and they have been working with an engineer that used to work at Boeing, and he lives out on the West Coast, and he's a strong dude. He owns a gym, and he just does these projects in semi-retirement for fun, and start bouncing ideas. Like, here's my thoughts and ideas. And he's like, oh yeah, that's easy. We just do this, this, and this. And I was like, what steel do you want to use? I was like, I don't fucking know. Like, I don't. That's a whole nother language. Like, one, I'm Forrest Gumping my way through the whole small business thing. Again, thank God I've got great partners that are teaching me. But he was talking about like rock wall hardness and all this other stuff, and I was like, what's You tell me what you think first, and we'll go from that. And we started getting prototypes really quickly because, again, they had all the logistics lined up. They had great manufacturing and guys that are really, really good. So we were able to put some prototyping in. We got our first samples around this time last year, and went through about 4 to 6 months of testing of everything I could get my hands on. I'm breaking cinder block, cracking bricks, getting as many vehicle doors and everything I could get my hands on just to find out what its limitations are. Like, we were ripping open glove boxes, filing cabinets. Like, if military needs to do like SSE or warrant searches, like, you got to break into stuff. And it just keeps eating, eating, and eating. And we went with a 420 HC steel because I was worried about rust. And I'll find my sample. It's somewhere around here. My first prototype I have of the final one that we brought to market, and it looks like hell, but there's not an ounce or a spot of rust on it. I've actually dunked it in salt water and let it sit for a couple of days to see if it would do, and nothing happened. So it was so far so good. And the whole goal too is if you do end up with one of these, like this one looks pretty because it's just a show sample. I want them to be beat to shit. Like it's almost like don't have a safe queen. Like let your guns get a little dirty, let them get beat up a little bit. So far, only one has been broken by a consumer, and we've sold just several thousand. And since April is when we started selling, he tried to crack a safe open with it, and I was
Oh,
like,
come on.
maybe I should have warned you. That's not really what it's designed for. But thank you. Now I know I can officially say that it's not designed for that because I didn't even think about that. So we sent him a new one. Not a big deal. But so far, like I said, the feedback has been fantastic. We're hearing tons of stories, just like the welfare check. I think somebody did just this week is like, "Hey, I used your bar at work today because this woman she fell and broke her hip or something, and she couldn't get to the phone for 2 or 3 days." And finally, they were able to break in and rescue her. Like I just those stories, I love hearing all of them, just because it gives dudes a little bit of capability. So it's not designed to replace the big full size stuff, but if you need it in a pinch, it'll give you some capability.
And that's what I was gonna say. Like, I think that it because some people will look at it, and I'm sure, right? You get the hyper skeptics, right, on the internet, because that's what the internet is, right?
Surprisingly, only a couple have been like, "Oh, that's a really expensive cat paw." I'm like, "All right, well, try and make your cat paw do what this can do." And, all right, cool. Like, it's not for everybody. I mean, you ain't
It's
gonna hurt my
so,
feelings.
yeah, I mean, it's but it's it has to be supplemental, right? And I've even talked to guys that are on teams now in like Dallas, right? And they're like, I carry three different size pry bars, or like two pry bars and a Halligan on my kit. I mean, depending on what you're doing, right? If you go in knowing that you don't need it, but like, yeah, I mean, there should be, in most instances, there's like an escalation of force method to almost everything, you know, like shooting. Versus verbal commands is next, and I'm not in law enforcement, so I don't know, but like, yes, eventually you escalate to the point of deadly force, which is shooting, right? So anything should have a point of escalation, so that it goes from like the small bar to the large bar, or you know, whatever, going from kicking a door to a sledge. So I think that like people looking at something and basing a first glance opinion right off of this is like it's supposed to be a do everything tool, like. No, I mean nothing is. That's why we carry, carbines and handguns, you know, or some kind of like bolt gun and a carbine if you're a sniper. Which I don't know if you have to. I've heard that that's a pain in the ass. Like, yeah, we have to have a carbine and a handgun and a long gun, and you got to carry all that shit and then go set up or whatever. But it's standard. There is an escalation to everything. It's just how it
It's
works.
like a toolbox or a golf bag, whatever analogy. Like, I don't need my driver on the green. Like, we've got rams that are just 70-pound heavy massive doors, for like heavy doors. Like, it all depends on your scout. So if it's I know it's going to be a big bitch of a door, like I'm not bringing this, but I can leave it on there just in case. Once I get past the big door, if I have a small door or something like that's easier, sure. Or again, if it's exigent and the big tools are far away, you still have something. But like you just said, there's a reason why there's different calibers and different barrel lengths and different platforms for whatever you need to do. Like, when you talk to anybody in law enforcement and military, like I would say every unit that I've had the blessing to work with, they had options. They can have a carry 16 inch or 11 inch, 10 inch or 300 blackout. Like, what is the mission required? What is your objective? Okay, this is the tool that would be best fit. Okay, go play. So it's never bad to have options, but also with that means be capable and trained with those options. Like, if you're going to carry a 16 inch 5.56 with a, I don't know, a 4-16 scope on it, okay, but you've never shot past 100 yards, like, all right, well, what the fuck's the point? You should probably go to a DMR class or a SPR class to learn dope and how to hold for wind and things like that, because otherwise you're gonna swag everything and hope you're lucky. Like, it's not how it works.
And it's, yeah, I mean, and that specifically, like, if you're using that for 100 yards and in, you're probably making a few mistakes before you got to that point. Like, a red dot should be fine out to several, out to like at least 200 yards, I would think. But I mean, at least, you know, and with this tool specifically, I'm thinking, like, because you mentioned Stoneman Douglas, and unfortunately, right, we have a problem in this country with mass casualty incidents like that. First responders are always patrol officers. They just because they're there, or they're within a couple minutes drive. It just by the nature of how the system works, it is, again, we'll say escalation, right? To get a SWAT team or, an HRT team or something like that, right? To respond to that incident. Having tools like this available, right, where they could keep that. I mean, I know some departments have some stupid ass policies like, oh, you can't wear an external carrier, you can't wear an external vest. We don't want to look too tactical. But if you can carry, I mean, it's the like you said, a weight of a loaded AR mag. That's, I mean, thinking about it, nobody likes to hear this, at least on the civilian side. Like, maybe don't carry three loaded mags on your chest. Maybe carry like one and a bar, and then something else. Like, if you prioritize your needs, this is something then that anybody and everybody can carry for when those situations arise. And it's the same point. If you really want to throw one of these in, like, some people have bags they carry, out in public and stuff. If you really needed it, you could have one of those in a go bag or a sling bag for yourself too. It's light, it's accessible. I don't personally subscribe to all of that. I think some people go over the top. They're like, yeah, I got a kit, I got a backpack with armor in it. Like, I do have a bag with an armor plate. I think it's kind of cool. It's just soft armor, but
Same.
I go over the top with some of that the way some people do. But it's accessible, and it's
Yes.
that you can, I guess, conceal it really, and not that
Oh,
it's anything to be afraid of, but.
yeah. Without getting into too much detail, there was a private security group and a bunch of retired military guys. They were doing some dignitary protection in the UK, and they can't have guns because they're retired military or LE, and they can't carry knives because of the crazy rules and laws they have over there. So I linked up with them at the OTOA conference, and they're like, hey, we're going over to the UK. We're going to be there for a couple weeks, and we need to do dignitary protection, but we don't have anything. But your tool is a rescue tool. I was like, yes, it is. And if you had to, wink, wink, you could technically use it for offense and defense. But they found a really cool way to conceal carry it, and they actually checked in with the local cops, and they're like, oh, no, that's good. So they actually were able to tuck this into their belt loops, and this was their option for providing some protection for whoever their dignitary was. So there's actually been, I went to the National School Resource Officers Conference in Dallas or Grapevine, Texas this year. Interesting conference. I'm used to like the SHOT Shows and the TTPOAs and OTOAs. So it was a different crowd, but a lot of private schools came up to us and were like, we might put this in every classroom because the teachers could use this to break a window to extract kids out the windows of
I
their
didn't even
classrooms. But
think of that.
God forbid somebody comes in, like, yeah, so smack somebody in the face with this, it ain't gonna feel good. So it's in a pinch, yes, 100%, again, not designed for that. There might actually be some military units deployed right now that have this, and they took their tomahawks off and use this, and they're like, hey, if the opportunity comes and to get somebody with it, we'll send you pictures. I was like, well, don't get in trouble, but just tell me the cool story afterwards, and I'll be happy to hear it.
I didn't even think about that in terms of like applications. I think we, in as a broad concept, think of breaching and breaching tools. It's about gaining entry, which you just talked about there with school. Anyway, it's so fucking sad that it always comes back to schools. It really is. But in a lot of those instances, thinking specifically of like Uvalde, Texas, right? Getting out of that room, if you had the means to get through some of that, whether it's like laminated glass or I don't know if you've had the opportunity to test this on like wired glass, but being able to get an opening out there where you can start feeding at least kids out through it, right? And creating an exit is almost as important, if not more important, in those
Oh, yeah.
situations where, like, I know they have those. I've seen them in pretty much, at least I think pretty much all the schools up here in Michigan have them, those little like, they're like L-shaped pieces of metal that you like slide and lock in between the bottom of the door and the floor, so you can barricade the door in the event of a mass casualty incident or a mass shooter. And actually, the corporate company I used to work for had them. They built a new like a new huge building in downtown Detroit, and they had those. And we had it as part of like our lockdown procedure. Like, pretty sure, anyways. You got to go and install that. And I was actually there for that. Like, we're like, oh yeah, you guys, like, I gave up my birthday. I thought it was gonna be cool. They're like, yeah, you're gonna get rescued by FBI HRT from Detroit and everything. You'll like be in the bathroom. They'll come like get you and escort you out. I was like, oh cool, I'll be able to see some cool shit. I did not. I sat through a presentation. I ate some free pizza, and then I sat in a men's room with three strangers for 4.5 hours. And then we got text messages saying, "Actually,
Oh.
over, come out." I was like, "Gay," but I know that we have those like countermeasures to lock the doors beyond just a doorknob now, and be able to get out through a window or something, as long as obviously there is an external window. That's huge.
And as sad as it is, at least like growing up, it was always fire code. Like, oh, we have to be fire escape, fire alarm. Like, nobody's died in a school fire since like 1900. So it's been over 100 years. Like, we've gotten really good at that. So I'm wondering, I know private schools are proactive about it, and there's some SOPs and some standard practices, but I'm wondering when it'll become like standard practice of, all right, part of code now for schools and commercial buildings is like, and reinforcing these doors to a level of like protecting the occupants in the event of an active shooter. Because of fire code, sometimes you can't put certain locks on certain doors and stuff like that. So it's like, all right, which one do we really need to be preparing for? And luckily, based on some stats I recently read, as schools are getting targeted a little less, they get more media attention, but they're more of the shopping malls and like open air stuff is becoming more of a trend. I'm not saying it's good or bad, but it's I always try to study trends and see I guess which direction these weirdos and attackers are really trying to target people.
Yeah, it's this. I mean, I think unfortunately it's very political with a lot of that, like, because
Oh,
that
yeah.
can be, never let a good tragedy go to waste and all that bullshit. For the kids, right? Like it's a huge thing, and not saying we shouldn't address that stuff, but I mean, this actually makes me think of a lot of different solutions to those problems, right? Because for years, everyone's first solution was, well, it's a metal detect like add metal detectors, which are expensive and they have to be maintained, and of course, then you have to have people that run and monitor those devices every day. Which means you have to pay them if they're teachers or if they're resource officers and things like that. And oh, it's turning the school into a prison. Okay, well, how else can we attack this problem, right? And and it's where I remember, like, from just the time I was growing up on like school buses, we all of a sudden started seeing the middlemost window on each side has like that red emergency handle where the whole window, if you pull it, will pop out. But we don't have that on windows in classrooms, which would be like if we went through that and looked at, like, we do like fire code, right? Like you said, hey, we need to be able to get out. It's unfortunate, it's shitty, it sucks, but like, hey, or alternatively, if that's not in the school budget for whatever reason, I know millages and all that shit, right? We can afford to have these kinds of tools, or a teacher could afford that. I had a great social studies practical law prof not professor teacher in high school, is former Marine. And I know, today being, Veterans Day and everything, but like, he would have had one of these in his class. I would bet you any money he would. And there you go. Now you have a solution instead of just being a victim. And it's unfortunate, but yeah, you have an option that isn't a firearm for people who don't want to do that,
I mean, I'm lucky. Obviously, I get to have a couple of them. So, but they live in all my bags. Like my backpack I carry for work every day with my laptop and everything. It has a full med kit and one of these in it. My old sling bag that I wear to the gym. There's been, sadly, at least in down here, there's been some romance, workplace violence where a guy just wants to go to the gym and shoot the ex-boyfriend or something like that. So you never know. And I'm always the type of person that it's better to have it, not need it, than need it, not have it. So, like at 1 pound, 5 ounces, I won't give away too much because it's almost done with the testing and evaluation phase. But we do have a lighter weight version coming. Hopefully, announce it around TTPOA or SHOT Show. We'll see how it goes. But just for guys who want to shave off a couple extra ounces, and we have probably, I want to say 12 new products in the works. Hopefully half of those come to life in 2026. And just products that, again, waiting for somebody else to design them never came true, and I got tired of waiting. So other variations, other capabilities. And again, this is had a lot of success with military law enforcement first responders, but we are designing stuff for the everyday responsible civilian. I've seen tons of Amazon window punches and seatbelt cutters and stuff like that, and I started testing some of them, and they really don't work that great. And a lot of stuff like curtain airbags, like the fact that people aren't like really worried about the heavy duty nylon and like
Oh
material,
yeah.
it's almost like Kevlar weave that goes in like ballistics. Like it's a heavy duty fucking material. These seatbelt cutters that guys are making are not very sharp. And if you have a curtain airbag, you're trying to pull somebody out, like you probably want to cut that away too. So we have that's probably the next product that hopefully we release is the smaller version, and we'll see how it does.
When I think a lot of those cutter tools also are, at least I'm thinking like the Rescue Me, where it's got like the little punch, but then it's like an enclosed razor blade that you like use to just slice a seatbelt. So in that instance, for a side, thinking for like specifically side curtain airbags, probably wouldn't be that helpful at all in that situation. At least if I'm thinking of it correctly, I don't think that opening is not very big. It's enough to slide a seatbelt in, and I don't know about the thicknesses of, those airbags, but given that there's obviously two layers of that Kevlar weave, like you're talking about, because it's an airbag, there should be air in between each layer. It's probably not going to work, and that becomes a problem. And I know, people just don't think about it, but like, yeah, those bags are durable. I think people used to rip those out of cars, right, and like smuggle drugs in them and shit.
Oh yeah, the people would steal them. Some mechanic shops would like remove your airbag out of your steering wheel and sell them and stuff because they're expensive. Like it's not a bad racket, but it's also unethical as fuck. But that's a whole nother thing. I think a couple shops down here they got criminally charged for it and everything. But imagine you get into a crash and you're expecting an airbag and you get a face full of steering wheel. Like it's not good. But
Yeah.
if those curtain airbags come out, like at least the steering wheel airbag usually deflates on its own. These curtain ones usually don't. So I would ex to ask people or first responders and responsible civilians to explore that and start doing a little bit of research. If you're going to buy some tools, luckily most of those little window punches are like 10, 20 bucks. So
They're not expensive, yeah.
you're not sacrificing a whole lot of investment. So again, something is better than nothing. And I'm never going to like fully out of product and be like, this is dog shit. But you're limiting capability on some things. And again, this thing has its limitations too. Like, I'm not going to pretend like it doesn't. But the fact that the industry was kind of lacking in attacking this whole side laminate window solution, like, it was driving me just insane. Like, nobody wants to address this. Like, look at a Tesla. Every window on some Teslas is laminate glass, the whole thing. That thing goes into water. Like we get drunk people driving down boat ramps all the time, or cars getting in crashes and they go into a canal or side ditch. Like it's wild. Some of the stories that we're starting to hear. Like we're working with Georgia State Police on possibly providing them with a bunch of these because one of their troopers got into a car chase. And if you know anything about Georgia State Troopers, like they don't fuck around. They are squared away, and if you break the law, they're going to come get you. So they were chasing this car, and after they pitted or something, the trooper's car rolled over into a ditch, and it was a Dodge Charger, side laminate windows, and he couldn't get out. And he was not in deep water, but it was starting to take on water, and they were trying everything. And then, luckily, that exact same week, a buddy of mine that works for Team Wendy, who has one of these, is like, y'all might want to check this thing out. And they're like, ooh, so. It's been a really fun experience, like meeting so many amazing people and hearing these stories, and the fact that it's able to provide again p the capability to hopefully save somebody's life. Like it gives me chills because I'm just a cop. Like I have a college degree for strength and conditioning, but it hasn't done shit for my career. Like I don't think I'm a smart man, but this just made sense to me. So at the end of the day, I just like tinkering with things and trying to like find ways to make things better. I feel like my little bit of my brain that's on the spectrum just like solving these puzzles in different ways, which is why I like breaching and long range shooting and all these little basically mini math equations that like I see when I look at things. It's just kind of weird, I guess.
No, I mean, and it does solve just a lot. Like we've gotten into so much of it, and just as you're talking about that, like, so here in Michigan, obviously we got lakes everywhere. Like when I was teaching marching band, we had a kid who was just driving back from he had like a lifeguarding job. The car died and locked up, and he drove into Lake St. Clair
Oh,
here,
shit.
and he was like on the news, like, and we had a picture saved of it because his he was able to get out on his own, but like the vehicle was submerged just over like the bottom of the window line, and he's like standing on top of the car waiting for
Shit.
like,
At
because
least he
he
got
went
out.
like a, yeah, he went, and it wasn't anywhere where, you know, like a beach or something where you're gradually going into water. He
Yeah.
drove like over a seawall, so
Oh, shit.
it was deep. And
Yeah.
he's on top of this car waiting for like police and rescue to get, you know, don't move, we'll come get you. But at any rate, thinking about like, you talked about weight, and you said you're having a lightweight version or a more lightweight version potentially coming out, and the saltwater testing. Another consideration for a lot of this is like maritime operations.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure with you guys down there in Florida, you probably get, I'm assuming you get some of this. I know in Louisiana, I'm friends with the guys at Orion Training Group. I know that when they were on the team that they were on, they did a bunch of maritime operations. It's a whole different animal because
Oh, yeah.
the more weight you have on the water, obviously, just means the faster you fucking sink. So,
Yep.
and if people have never been inside boats, you're very confined. You
Oh,
know, there's like a
I
ton of
hate
room.
it. I
Well, yeah,
hate
you
it.
being 6'7", like that's
Oh,
probably really
trust me.
shitty.
Oh, I smack my head and my nods on everything. It's I'm I hate being on boats. Like I love being on boats for leisure and fun, but having to
Right.
clear vessels and VBSS and shit like that is a fucking pain in the ass. But you're right. It is something that this has found room to work in. A couple Coast Guard tackle it, and I think a couple MSRT guys purchase it. I can't, like, a blessing and a curse. I can't keep up with all the emails and orders that we get, but I do remember a couple of those come through. And I'm always dying to hear feedback too, like from every customer. Like, tell me how it sucks. Tell me how I can make it better. Tell me how it's good and bad. Like, don't be shy. You won't hurt my feelings. Like, it's all part of the process in my eyes. If some feedback leads to the next generation of this and making it better for the consumer and the community, like, I'm all for it. So I'm always excited to hear that kind of feedback.
Yeah, I mean, and it's just it's such a miss, I think, when people think about some of that stuff with just because you can't like we talked about all that stuff earlier, and we talked about explosive breaching, large tools, heavy tools. Yeah, man, the maritime thing. I don't know. Can you do I don't know if you can do explosive breaching on a boat or not, or if it's really difficult, just given.
Not really. Things you would need, like some of the latches and stuff that you really need just a freaking blowtorch, because if it's like a legit latched like vessel door on like a larger ship, like there ain't no mechanical device that's going to get you through there. You're probably gonna need a torch of some kind. But there's always little tips and tricks and different ways to do things. Luckily, one of my best friends, he just got married this week. He went to the Merchant Marine Academy, and he worked on boats for a long time. And when we were doing some stuff, he's like, we can kill the engines from this like little box over here. And we're all like, well, so we don't have to go to the pilot house or the engine room. He's like, no, it's right here. I'm like, yeah, all right, fucking do it. All right, scenario's over. We're done. Boats done. So there's always little tricks like that. The more you learn and like outsource, like talking to people and stuff like that. But boats, I would say, are like we have a very big yachting community down here, and we train on them a lot. They're a pain in the ass. There's all kinds of little hidey holes and hidden crevices. Like if somebody really wants to hide on one of these big boats, like you're gonna be on that bitch for a long time searching.
Yeah, I mean, just yeah, I've never honestly been on anything that large, but we see just on the lakes up here, we get some pretty large ones. And just thinking about like logistically, the tools part of it is one thing, right? But then like the tactics of clearing that stuff, because you never like we talk about CQB and like commercial hallways are great, residential hallways suck, and then you have those hallways. And if you're loaded down with kit and everything else and your helmet and your nods and stuff, it's just like
Yeah,
just sucks. Like no matter
it
how
sucks.
you slice it, like, and I've never done it, but I don't think you have to have done it to just like look at it and understand that, you know, like you, right? Like you said, you're 6'7", nods add like another 4 inches to that when they're flipped up or whatever. Like, and it just you single file, you can't do any of the shit that you see online. You can't do any like just it changes the conversation completely. And it
Yeah.
would suck ass to have to do that. I mean, Yeah, and you lose the cool factor. Like, you're not there to enjoy that boat. You're just there to do what you got to do and get
Oh
the.
yeah, you can look cool as the other side of the pillow in a shoot house, but on these boats, there's so many trip hazards and snag hazards, and it always looks like a monkey fucking a football. Like, when you watch guys in the back, I guess I luckily I got blessed with being a team leader recently, and like being able to sit back and watch. I'm like, yep, I've tripped over that ship before. Yep, and I was, hey, everybody, watch your fucking heads. Like, just little reminders for my guys and stuff like that. It's not sexy, but you just get the job done. Like, it's down and dirty sometimes.
Yeah.
Luckily, we haven't had to do anything crazy on boats, not in recent years at least. So it's good training, but you've got to be ready for the shit show. And hopefully, you don't become a national, like, wide debrief of why something went way sideways.
Yeah, and I'm always, dude, like I have a couple of friends obviously that do a lot of that stuff, and when you hear some of those stories, that I don't ever want to like make it sound like I'm being hypercritical. I know it's not an easy job, and that's always the beauty of like the Monday morning quarterbacking and everything, right? Is that you can sit there and in hindsight go, well, why didn't you do this, or you should have done this stuff with like Jack and Jill bathrooms, you know,
Oh,
and
yeah.
shooting through a door accidentally, and then you have blue on blue and all that stuff. But like, yeah, you know, I mean, once you make national news in that regard, or actually I think didn't just understanding some of those fundamentals. I think it was Florida. It was a couple of years ago. It was like a FedEx van that got surrounded, you know, by like 18 guys, and they shot
Yep.
it. Like, and it's like, okay, well, you didn't really make an L shape, and you didn't really account for like all the cars surrounding this, and you
Yeah.
shot that bitch like, I think it was like 200 times or something. Like, they just.
It was a rough one. It was a UPS shooting. It was actually it was part of the genesis of my unit. I was pushing really heavily because we touched on it earlier. Like, the first guys there aren't SWAT guys most of the time. And they're gonna be patrol guys or a couple detectives, maybe. Like, so we started doing hostage rescue tactics for patrol guys. Like, if you hear screams or gunshots, like, people are dying, like, you ain't waiting for us. Like, that's the old Columbine, like, debrief type of thing. That's the whole evolution of like the change in tactics for law enforcement. Like, you gotta go, you gotta go. That's the day we really earn our money. So that one was actually, I got blessed with the opportunity to teach out at the or not really teach, but I guess proctor out at the Staccato Ranch, and I'm sorry, Staccato Vegas. They had their national SWAT competition a couple weeks ago, and I'm working with the guys from Staccato and Hades to set up like scenario-based training, or I guess stages, if you will, for the competition. And mine was based off of the UPS Miami shootout. They gave me a van, and it was a bit they actually built me a parking lot. I thought they were just going to give me like a gravel lot with some cars in it. No, they made a parking lot with trees and curbs, and it was
Oh,
beautiful. They
okay.
probably spent like $100,000. Like, it's a Staccato's got money. But everybody ran through, and actually, these are some of the top teams in the country, so they actually all looked like rock stars. But back to the point of, like, patrol guys need options. They need breaching options. They need the training of how to respond, how to set up a crisis entry team or a crisis response team, whatever your team calls it or agency calls it. It's not just SWAT guys. Like, and there's been a lot of gatekeeping the more I travel and train agencies, where it's like, yeah, we won't even teach patrol guys how to breach. I'm like, why? Like, oh, they're only given basic active shooter. I'm like, okay, well, patrol hostage rescue has been more popular than ever. Like, just go on any police Instagram page, and you'll see body camera footage of like dudes responding to apartments, hotels, houses, and they're hearing screams and they gotta go. Like, or crazy dudes taking kids hostage with a knife. Like, it happens so often that if you're not preparing your people to solve that, or at least tabletopping a scenario, let them think about what they would do, you're setting them up for failure. The day they have to solve that and they've never seen it before, and their brain's trying to grasp at something in the Rolodex or the toolbox that they don't have, like, you're setting them up for failure. And in my opinion, like, as an instructor, it's my fault that I haven't prepared that person for that day. So I hope agencies are seeing that shift. I know at least my area we are, but it's one thing I hate about law enforcement is lack of networking communication. We don't talk to each other enough. SWAT teams are good about it, but agencies as a whole, I don't see a whole ton of bouncing ideas back and forth of like, what should we be working on? What trends are you seeing? Are you just waiting for the next incident and everybody jumps on the hot topic and then we're still behind the eight ball for a year or two? It's kind of just, I hate the phrase, the way we've always done it. And it seems like that's just the accepted practice sometimes. It's government work at the end of the day, it is what it is. But yeah,
Yeah, it's
I could talk
being,
for days about that topic.
yeah, I mean, it's being reactive versus proactive.
Yeah.
I think in almost any discipline in life, right, that's not the way you want to be, because really when you see large changes, large improvements, it's usually when something really fucking bad happens that either corporate America, it costs you a shitload of money. And in your line of work, it costs a lot of lives. And that's just not, and I'm not saying you can't ever prepare for everything, but I
No.
do think that we, and I don't even want to limit it to law enforcement. I think it's like a cultural thing here in the US because we get overly sensitive to some of this stuff. I blame the media a lot.
Oh, yeah.
We're really slow to change because, like I said earlier with the metal detectors in schools, oh, it looks like a prison. Well, it kind of is. It's full of people
Yeah.
that don't want to fucking be there most of the time. They get allotted yard time as children and they eat really shitty food in a cafeteria. I mean, you're not that far off. I mean, I know
Nope.
there's like a little bit of, hilarity behind that, but it really, like, I think we're worried about the wrong things. If
Yeah.
our primary concern is keeping the children safe or the children and the staff safe, why not you'll get it metal detectors? Why not have, I know some people advocated against school resource officers.
Yeah.
And it's why we always had them when I was in school. I never really understood as a child. I was like, why do we have a cop here? I don't know. He's like, they were always nice guys, always super nice, always wearing
Yeah.
polos and shit, walking around, making jokes and everything. You get older, unfortunately, that, reality slaps you and you're like, oh, okay, that's why they were there.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, like I never had to deal with anything like that. But it's just like, man, fuck, like, let's just be proactive. Look at,
Yeah.
like you said it earlier, look at the trends, spot the trend and go, we're seeing enough of this. And just because it hasn't happened yet, it doesn't mean it's never going to happen. What steps could we reasonably take? And I think, yeah, patrol officers, hey, responding to this stuff. If you haven't know, if you, if, I mean, like everyone's got eyes and ears. We all have Fox News and CNN and these apps and notifications on our phones. And I'm sure in the law enforcement realm, people talk to each other. Like the agencies may not talk, but I'm sure you got buddies at other departments and everybody
Oh
talks
yeah.
to each other and shit when
Oh,
stuff
I'm not
happens.
shy about reaching out. Like
Yeah.
if anything that I can say is the best blessing about starting this company and training around the country and like learning and being mentored and just talking to networking to people has been the best part of all of this. Like I somewhere in my phone right now I've got somebody on the West Coast, Midwest, Texas, New York, like Maine, Idaho, it doesn't matter. I can find somebody somewhere about something, and I wish more cops would be like that. It's definitely getting better. I will say that. The
Yeah.
more I travel, I see the uptick from when I started doing this years ago. But it's a little bit of like check your ego. Like I don't have all the answers. No one ever does. But it's okay to ask questions. Just be, I mean, it's company. My company's called Good Dude Concepts. Just be a good dude. Like nobody has ever been a dick to me when I ask them a question. I've been blessed. Like, hey, you guys ever had this problem before? Oh yeah, we had it 2 years ago. Oh cool. What'd you guys do? And I had that same problem 2 years ago, and that's what we did. Like you just go back and forth and bounce ideas around, drink some beers, and just bullshit sessions. Like you'd be surprised how much that can like resonate, and then there you go. Like one idea can come from that, and it could be, I don't know, life changing or policy changing, SOP changing for an agency. So
Yeah.
I encourage everybody to just think outside the box a little bit, or be open to put yourself out there and like network. Like don't be afraid. Go to classes, train with everybody, change exchange numbers with dudes. You don't have to be best friends with them and fucking send them Christmas cards, but hey, just be cool. Like, I don't know. It's a weird thing I've noticed. I don't know. Maybe I'm just old and getting old and cranky about it. I just wish it happened
No,
more.
I dude, the fucking ego, especially from people that shouldn't have them, both like that's, and when I say that, I mean professionally and otherwise. Like,
Oh, yeah.
it's a problem in the community. I think people see it like, if you ask questions or if you ask for help, right? Oh, then everybody knows I don't know what I'm doing. Like, dude, we can see that you don't know what you're doing, that you can't hit the
Yeah.
fucking target,
Yeah.
or whatever. Just to ask for help. We're all here to get better. I mean, most people are.
Everybody started as a beginner somewhere. The best shooters in the world had coaches. The best shooters in the world still have coaches. Like nobody showed up at SEAL Team 6 knowing having all the fucking answers. Michael Jordan didn't become Michael Jordan like that. Like all these everybody who's great at something started somewhere. And that's the fun part about the journey. I call it chasing unicorns or chasing dragons. Like you're chasing an imaginary thing that doesn't exist and you're never going to catch it, but that's okay. That's the journey. That's the fun. And not to get too philosophical, because I can nerd about that stuff all day, but the psychology of that is fun. Like I'm never going to achieve perfection, but that's okay. I'm still going to chase it, because if an active shooter comes out anywhere, I hope that if my mom or my wife is in there and she's trapped and needs help, it's the dude who gives a fuck, who goes to training and is squared away, is the dude first one there, who's going to show up and save the day and be the rock star. And that's what I hope to do for somebody else. God forbid I have to do it. So it's also, I get a lot of our new recruits, and I know it's always been like the new generation of cops are not the same and all that type of talk. These days, it's not a lot of people want to do this law enforcement job. Like if I had kids and they were like, "Hey, I want to be a cop one day," I'm like, "You sure? I'd rather you join the military, honestly,
I just had
than
a
be a
buddy go
cop."
through that. He's like, I want to get a, he wanted to become a, he works in IT, but he's like, I'm going to become a reserve sheriff's deputy. I was like, are you sure? Right now? Do you watch the news? Like, are you sure? It's not a good, it's not a good time.
It is a great career. Like I said, 99% of my job is hanging out with my friends doing cool shit. But at the end of the day, it's government work. And you can talk to anybody in law enforcement, military, even at the tier one level, it's still government work. And there's still bullshit. Like the tier one guys, they get the best assets and resources, and it's their dream job. They still have a lot of bullshit to deal with that they can get fucked over and treated like shit, just like anybody else in any government organization is not immune to that level of fuckery. Watch any podcast of some of these guys and how they're treated after they get out of the military. It's like they don't give a fuck about them or the reasons why they leave. It's sad. I don't think it should ever be that way, but it's government work, and there's probably no real way to change it unless you're, I don't know, make me king for a day and I'll try to change it, but I'm also not going to be a politician or try to run for governor or any of that shit. So I'm hoping common sense takes over for some of these people, because it's, I don't know how to fix it.
No, I mean, and it's been an issue for a long fucking time. I mean, that's why you have so many, I think, podcasts, books, articles, blogs, whatever. Like, I mean, people talking about it. It is a big fucking problem, and I think ultimately it comes down to poor leadership, but I think so many things do. And yeah, if you could fix it.
That would be a too easily 2 hour conversation just on leadership and law enforcement.
Yeah, I mean, and it's having never worked in the field, I can speak about leadership in general, but like obviously not in the field. It's a more rare thing than people realize. I mean, it's just sometimes people fail upward in all walks of life, and it just sucks no matter, what it is. But that much worse when you have all those other outside factors, the mental health piece of it, the physical wear and tear, all those things, even under situations. A poor leader ruins the whole fucking thing.
Nothing kills morale faster than a shitty boss.
I've been in those before. It's rough.
It doesn't matter what your career path is. If you're a supervisor or your leadership is a shit show, it's hard to put your pants on for work sometimes.
Yeah, you lose the motivation. And I mean, also it makes it hard to advance in things like getting into some of the training if they're not an advocate for it, like you're talking about with patrol officers and stuff. And it be and I, honestly I don't understand why. I'm sure some of it comes down to budget, 'cause I've had jobs where I found out after the fact, like, oh, like why didn't we get to send so and so to a conference or to this training to come back and learn the software better or whatever. And so, oh, well, if we have X amount of money left over in our budget for the year, they get a bonus. I was like, so they wouldn't spend money on us so that they got money to them. Like, that's fucking shitty, and I don't know if that's true in law enforcement, but I know that it's weird because at the same time, like, I know that there's instances where they go, if we don't spend the budget, then they don't give us the same amount of money next year. right?
Correct.
So then where the fuck is the money going, and why are we prioritizing things the way we are? It just never seems to make fucking sense when you read, when I have conversations with guys in law enforcement, or you read some of these like newspaper articles and stuff, and it's like, we have to pass another millage, we got to raise taxes. Like, we just did it in my city, and it's hilarious and upsetting. So people are like, well, we have great emergency services here, we need to pass this. And it's like, yeah, but we've passed a millage every 2 years. So I've been in the city for 10 years. Like, my taxes have gone up considerably, and I love my police department and fire department, but like, as in, like a private citizen, I'm like, can you tell me why we're not applying for some of these grants and shit? Because
That's the key right there. Every agency needs a really good grant coordinator. I'm blessed we have a great one. She finds us money left and right for all kinds of stuff. But there's some agencies that don't have any, and there's thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars just waiting for an application. And agencies don't take advantage of it. And some of them are training related. That's why I'll pimp a company, Community First Project
Oh yeah,
is
Sully. I had him on
Sully.
a couple months back. Yeah.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah. Sully's a rock star. I freaking love that guy. He's the nicest guy in the world. But he has his whole organization of guys priority listen, but is nonprofit to just train cops.
Yeah.
What, like, in a sad way, I wish that didn't have to exist, but at least somebody with his resume is out there solving that problem, and there's a solution. So anybody who's listening who might be a cop, don't give up. Like, always find a way over, around, through. It doesn't matter. You'll find a way through the brick
Yeah.
wall. There's a lot of projects that I've been blessed to be a part of that have been long game projects. Like, I will Andy Dufresne, Shawshank, anybody. I'll write you a letter a week until you give me what I want, because I know what I'm trying to do is going to make the troops happy and be better for them. But I've been thrown out of the office. Like, okay, I'll be back in 2 weeks and I'll bring it back
Oh
up, and
shit.
I'm not going to give up. So there's ways. There's so many resources. I'll tell. I don't know if you'll add my page or whatever on here. I try to be a resource to everybody. I tell everyone I'm just trying to be useful. I'm just a dude. If I don't have the answer, I'll try to find it for you through somebody I know. Again, I've been blessed with a great network of people that have been so supportive and mentored me through all kinds of shit, that if you can't find the training or the money or something, like, we'll figure something out. Like, I'll help you connect those dots the best way I can. Now, it's going to take effort. It ain't going to be easy,
Oh
but there's
yeah,
a way to do it. 100%.
never,
Like,
never easy.
I've seen so many dudes like try to instill change in a positive way, and they get shut down. And after you get told no so many times, it just kills your morale. And you're like, all right, fuck it. So don't give up. Like, keep pushing, keep pushing. If you believe in your heart, it's going to make your agency and your people better. Don't give up, please. I encourage everybody to keep going.
No, absolutely. You can't. I mean, you can't. It sucks, and it's easy to say it, but yeah, you can't stop. So, I know we're kind of pushing towards the end of time here, Chris. This has been, dude, outstanding. If people have questions or they want to check out I know you have an Instagram, I know you got a website. Where can people reach out if they have questions, or if they're trying to figure out, adoption stuff for agencies and their teams and things like that? Where can people find you? Where can they reach you?
So easiest way is I run our Instagram page, so Good Dude Concepts on Instagram. We have a YouTube channel, and on all the social medias, we're trying to post like how-to videos and updates and just random tabletop things. I'm gonna start doing some gear reviews really soon as well, based on things that I just like that have made my life easier. Because I always, if I was working midnight shift and I had a couple hours to kill, I jumped on YouTube and would pick guys' brains and get stuff like that. So I want to just give that back to the community, just based on my experiences and stuff like that. And then if you need anything for purchasing, we're in stock finally. It's been a back and forth all year. Blessing and a curse where we would be able to get call our manufacturer, hey, how many can we get? Like 500. All right, send them. And we sell out in a couple hours, or we get 1,000, they sell out in a day. So we're able to get enough that we're in stock, hopefully throughout the holidays, and then we'll restock in 2026 again. But the website where you can inquire for, you can purchase, or if you need an LE order, there's a page, you fill out a little questionnaire, and we'll send you over a quote within 24, 48 hours. And I would say Instagram is definitely the easiest way to get hold of me. I try to check it at least every couple hours.
Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate the time and the insight, sharing your experiences and everything. It's been awesome, man. Really, really appreciate it. If If we have the availability, I'd love to do this again in the near
Yeah,
future.
absolutely. No, this was fun. I really enjoyed this. Thank you for having me.
No, dude, absolutely. I really, really appreciate the time. But we'll definitely be in touch, man, and
For
stay
sure.
safe out there.
You too.
Great conversation with Chris. I would definitely say he is a good dude, pun intended, right? But it was a cool conversation, man. We got into so much stuff, and I told him this after we kind of got done recording. There are certain things I had in my mind where I was like, I think we're going to talk about this. We're going to talk about, the things we talked about. We're going to talk about breaching and some of the tools, right? So shotguns and Halligans, sledge, explosive breaching, using saws, cutting torches, right? All of that stuff, because a lot of those tools, like breaching as a skill set, is literally I think defined as like a skill set for making entry to an otherwise fortified, threshold or door or facility, right? Not making that up, but I think that's generally you get the gist of it. And we went from that into like what led him to creating the BRB and the applications of that and some of his own experiences. Obviously, I think the Stoneman Douglas school shooting is something that is still very, very fresh in a lot of people's minds. If I'm not mistaken, I think that was the school that David Hogg was at when the shooting occurred. Well, he was a student there. He was not there. He rode his bike up after the fact, and then now has tried to become, a political pundit or something or other. And he feuded with the MyPillow guy on social media. So obviously a great success. But born out of real necessity and real need. But then we got into like maritime stuff, and I feel like anytime you talk about tools and solutions in law enforcement, if you're going to be doing maritime work, corrosion and rust resistance are huge things, right? That's why there's the whole line of the SIG P226. I'm pretty sure, right? They have a specialized coating on it, so it is resistant to salt water. When you talk about tools and weight and things, that whole game changes when you get onto water, which is why you don't see teams that are in maritime units and stuff or doing maritime operations. They're not wearing ballistic helmets usually. Usually they're like bump helmets and stuff because of concerns with sinking, right? And you can't carry all these heavy ass tools either, because on boats you don't have enough room to use that ram on that door because the hallway's only so wide. The hatches need to be cut with a torch, so there's like just specialized applications for a lot of this stuff. So we got into all of that, thinking about the tools and how I'd say traditional breaching is carried out, where the BRB comes into things, and then sometimes you have to use a certain solution: cutting torches, quickie saws, explosive breaching, water charge. We didn't get into some of that stuff, right? Like there's a lot to it. And I hope I'm able to get more guests on that are able to speak to that specific discipline, right? I think people have a lot of interest in it. However nonsensical it might be for some of us listening, right? Some of us are in the civilian space. I know there's a couple schools in the country here that do actually allow for open enrollment breaching classes after you've completed a certain number of courses and curriculum and things like that, where like they'll let you sign up and you can learn how to do this stuff. I don't even know how that works. So you gotta bring your own saw, or do they supply them on site? Do you gotta bring your own shotgun, or they supply the ammo? Because I know when you get into like breaching rounds for shotguns, it's like clay and bismuth and other. The ammo is what makes shotgun breaching difficult, not necessarily the gun itself or anything like that, because any shotgun could be a breaching shotgun. We just see them in a short format because you want them on your kit, you want them on your body, and therefore you can't have this full length 20-inch barrel shotgun strapped. I mean, you could put it on your back. It's just going to cause a lot of issues with doorways and shit like that, right? So, we got into all that, and we also talked about some of the civilian stuff. Guys just want to throw shit on their kit. I think having a purpose, having a dedicated reason for all this stuff is your first step. If you're sitting here listening and going, man, do I need one of these things? My answer would be, I don't know, do you? Or maybe you do. If you're in law enforcement, I would say, fuck yeah. And actually, I'll take that back. As a civilian, I think just thinking about the potential applications of this tool and what you could keep in your vehicle for cases of emergency, I would say, yeah, you could probably use one of these. Keep it with your roadside kit. So if you have to stop, we always talk about medical, right? And oh, if you see an accident on the side of the road or something, you can stop and render aid. But if you can't get to the person because the window and the glass and things, either it's cracked but not broken, or it's not broken at all, and you need to get into it and they're non-responsive or something, and you have the medical training, or you're with somebody who stopped who has the medical training and you guys need to get into that vehicle, if you have the supplies to help, they have the skills to help, you need to have the tool to gain entry, right? And I think that's where this comes in. I mean, $100 really, when we, and it's kind of unfortunate to say, but we look at 2025, we look at the amount of shit we spend a $100 bill on, there's way worse shit than that. That's like one dinner out with your wife, you know, hey, stay in for a Saturday night instead of going out and spending that money at the bar or the bar and restaurant, whatever. And then you have this tool and it's made at a quality level where it's not going to be something you have to replace, right? You buy, it's like a lot of the power tools we buy are hand tools that we buy. As long as you buy a brand name, you're not buying it off Temu or Wish, this tool is going to last you. So really cool hearing the genesis of all of this, really cool getting to sit down and pick Chris's brain and talk with him. And you know, if you guys aren't familiar with it, go check him out on Instagram. There's a lot of really reputable trainers and really reputable businesses and things that are in the community and tied to the training community that are starting to get behind this as a product. And again, it's not like a do-all. That was the first comments when I found it, and I was like, hey, I think this is really interesting, man. I'd send it to some people and they go, I don't know how much you're gonna be able to do with that. But when you look at it in terms of not being a breachers only, you know, type of tool, but a universally applied tool that can grant access in terrible circumstances, it becomes very valuable. So I think it was really cool to hear about it. It was really awesome to talk and connect with Chris. Certainly look forward to being able to do this again with him in the future, as I do with so many of our guests. And we just meet like these just exceptional people. Like I would never, I mean, I'm not a breacher, I'm not in law enforcement, but just looking at this and going like, how would I put this all together? How would I dream this up? And like, you know, and everybody has those ideas, right? Everyone's like, oh, if I could build my own tool, I would totally do this. But then nobody does, right? Until somebody like Chris does. And then it's just really cool to see the growth, to see, you know, the adoption and the popularity and the versatility and just all that stuff. So it's really awesome. And I'm happy to be able to sit down and talk with him about it and bring it to you guys and your attention. And if you guys got questions, if you're a cop, I know we have lots of law enforcement folks. We got lots of private security folks that listen on here. You guys have reached out. Dude, reach out to him, man. Figure it out. See if you can get some for your agency. You know, I think it's one of those things with a minimal amount of training, you know, that they provide. I mean, YouTube videos, I've already seen some, you know, a lot of clips and some clips on YouTube, a lot of clips on Instagram. It's not that hard to use it at a fundamental level. Could be invaluable in emergency situations. So at the very least, as always, I hope you guys found this entertaining, but I do hope that you pulled some information out about this, especially, man, if you're one of those guys, you see, you know, Faro just came out with this new pouch. I can go ahead and I can put bolt cutters on my back. You know, there's other brands that do it too. Like, don't be that guy unless you really need to be that guy. Your friends are going to make fun of you. I'm going to make fun of you. I mean, maybe not, but probably. And it just doesn't make sense. And I really do mean it when I see guys like, I'm going to build a breacher kit. Like, what is a fucking breacher kit? It's just your kit with a couple modifications made to carry a breaching tool. And a lot of times, if you don't know how to set it up correctly, you just end up looking like a tool. So that's my thoughts on that. I'm sure guys that do this professionally would probably agree with a good deal of that sentiment. So thank you guys so much for listening. At this point, you know, make sure you guys hit that subscribe button. We appreciate all the support. And go check out Chris. Follow Chris, man. Make sure you guys are throwing your support behind him. There are really, really good companies out there in the community that are doing good work with good products, trying to make things better, not just trying to make a buck. If he was trying to make a buck, he could charge double for this thing and he would still be halfway to a Halligan and more affordable and still be every bit as advantageous. But he found a way to keep it around $100. And I think that that says a whole lot about his mission and Chris as a person, really. So really, really good stuff. Hope you guys took a bunch away from this. That's all I have this week. We're rolling on through November, man. I mean, before you guys know it, man, it's going to be fucking Thanksgiving. And then we're, you know, it's really time for Mariah Carey to come out. And it's just Christmas, man. So thank you guys so much for checking this out. God bless. Stay safe out there. And like we always say, work hard, train smarter, and be prepared.